Yeah. What up? What up? What up? What up? God Dimension Podcast, episode 25. Yeah, I think I'm on 25. Got my boy here with me. Man, we go way back, bro. How long? Like 01?
Yeah, long time.
Long time. Like, nigga, I thought you stole my bike. Oh, yeah. You should have gone head up.
Yeah, I don't even know. It's
you should have gone head up over that bike. We had the same bike. Yeah, but my boy Darren, bro, what's the deal with it, man?
What's good, bro? Just chilling, man.
My dog, I see you been working.
Yeah.
I see you working, man. You talking about some real shit before we got on mic.
Oh, yeah, man.
We was breaking down the business model for real, for real.
Yeah. It's really just, you know, whatever you do, when you grinding, you put it together as you go. And the best thing is just staying persistent and making sure you're the best at whatever it is you do.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel you. Now, when we was kids, I knew, like, you and your sister – like rapped and whatnot. Shout out to Tamir. I know y'all rap,
right?
And whatnot. But I didn't think that, you know, because he was real heavy in the football too,
right?
I always thought, oh yeah, he gonna go to the college, play football, probably gonna go to the league too, on some real shit,
right?
Yeah, but I didn't know that, you know, he was real heavily like versed in music too when it comes to this producer stuff too,
right?
So tell me about your beginnings of the music stuff or whatnot. Well, or where you got started from?
I got started when I was in probably my elementary or early middle school, in sixth or seventh grade. My sister, Tamara, she used to do poetry, and then she started rapping first. But I would just, like, walk with her when she used to be writing her raps and always be, like, shaping it up. Like, nah, say this,
right.
Say that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I would say that kind of – and then that transitioned into me rapping, but – I enjoyed rapping, but it wasn't like my full throttle passion. Mm. And when I was like seventh grade, I got introduced to, like, I want to say, like, GarageBand, like, through one of my friends.
Yeah.
And then from there, I bought my first program, Acid Pro. And that was, I was probably seventh grade then.
Wow.
And then I used that for about a year. And then I ran into somebody that used Fruity Loops, the OG.
Man, Fruity Loops was the thing, boy. Yeah.
Look, put it like this. Right now, the latest version is FL20. And that's it's only because it's the 20-year anniversary.
Right.
But
right.
Really, before 20, it was 12. So it's right. Really like the 13th one, right?
Yeah.
I started on 4. Like Fruity Loops 4.
Oh, yeah,
that was the latest one out, like, when I started.
Right.
So that was like 12 years ago, something like that.
And that don't seem that long, though, when you think about it. But when you say it, like, damn, that was 12 years ago.
Yeah.
But it seemed like 12 years ago was just like yesterday. Because maybe you can still remember a lot of shit that happened 12 years ago.
Man.
You know what I mean?
I don't remember the first beat I made.
No, for real?
Nope.
What was the, what about rap? First rap?
The first rap?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't even know. I think I know the first one I wrote. Yeah, yeah. I remember the first one I wrote with my brother. Yeah.
And that was it, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't remember none of the lyrics, but I remember the first one I wrote was with my brother.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I see now, you grew up in, so you split your time
everywhere.
Between, man.
I'm like a third in three places right now.
So I want to say, correct me. Nah, Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And then here, I met you here.
Right.
Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And then you went to college in
Alabama.
Yeah, Tuskegee, right?
Yeah, for like 5.5 years.
Yeah, I pay attention, man.
So I lived into Cincinnati. I lived in Cincinnati till I was like 13. But I used to come and visit up here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then I moved here full time from 13 to 18. And then from 18 to 23, I was in
Tuskegee.
Alabama,
yeah.
In Atlanta on the summers.
And, nah.
And then I'm moving back here.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, does how big of an influence did Cincinnati have, like, on your decision to make music?
Well, not music.
Or just
business.
Business, yeah.
Yeah. My family itself is entrepreneurs.
Dad, yeah, you tell me back in the day your dad had that shop.
Yeah, but the crazy thing about the shop though. Is where it was located. Did you ever go?
Bro, I've never been.
Okay.
I never got a chance to go.
But where it's located, like, one of the most busy streets in Cincinnati, period, is called Corrine Avenue. and my dad's store is right off Corain, like the street off of Corain. And they starting to build up the area around there.
Right.
Like my dad's store is at the intersection, and it used to be just like a little stop sign right there. Now they got all the stoplights and building up around there.
Mm-hmm.
So his store that he paid like 40 or 50 for back when I was in school, he paid it off when I was in third grade. It's worth like 300K now. And they even built the McDonald's and stuff they supposed to build down the street. It's supposed to go up crazy. Like, so now my dad's store worth a whole bunch.
He still got it.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yo.
Yeah. I eventually got to get out there.
It's crazy.
What was the name of the store?
The Hookup Sportswear. So that's what got me into business. I knew I was going to do something for myself, but I didn't know what. And music, I guess, was just kind of one of the first opportunities to get really good at something, you know?
Right. So what are your top, influences? It's like two-part question. Top influences, like, in music, and top influences as far as, like, business model or business-savvy individuals?
Business-wise, I really look up to, like, Gary Vee. And ironically, what's bro name? It's an economist named David. I can't think of his last name right now. But pretty much, I used to read his books all the time.
Right.
And he believed in no credit. Like, don't loan nothing. Just buy everything you need cash.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even a house. If you're disciplined, like, he break it down to, like, even if you work a factory job and just work full time and save your money, you can buy you a house cash in 6 years.
Right.
If you
right.
just grind and get to it. But everybody is like caught up. I want this car I want to drive now, and this vacation now that you ain't going to never be able to save that. So you end up loaning. And that's the trick by the loaners.
Right.
They want you to loan on it for a long period of time and keep extending it.
Especially with interest too, right?
Yeah. Because of interest. But then the people that loan it to you control the market. So they can make it crash after 20 years of a lot of people getting on the loans, and now they take everybody's house.
Yeah.
Like, that's the long-term trick of the loans. Like, and they do it, like, in the housing market crash of 2007. They did it. 50,000 people lost homes. They just took 50,000 people homes. And these are people that was hardworking and had jobs and stuff like that. So listening to these economists that say no credit, it make a lot of sense to me, and that's something I always get slack for. Everybody like preach for credit, but I'm anti.
Nah, as I got older, bro, and you know, paying off a credit card, like my money could be really going somewhere else right now.
Right.
If you really think about it, like you said, saving it up, you know, like not really spending no change of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that credit shit, if you don't manage it, will kill you, will ruin you, ruin a lot of shit for you.
Because it messes up your mind state too.
Yes, bro.
When you got the money on loan, you'd buy stuff you wouldn't buy if it was your cash in your hand.
Right.
Like, you know.
You're like, oh, shit, I'll pay it back. You know what I mean?
When you got that 100 in your hand, you got to watch it. You got to break it and then watch it all go away.
Man, you're like, goddamn.
You don't buy the same stuff you buy when you got a credit card.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
You got to be like real straight with your spending. You know, you can't be like real frugless or anything. Mm-hmm. Nah, I agree. My business, I say, main one, like you said, I think the main one for me is like Gary Vee. A lot of people like just think Gary Vee just be bullshit.
Right.
Gary Vee ain't bullshit. Like Gary Vee damn near got the Bible of this shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's to hustle, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's advantages to every generation of business.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And disadvantages. If you, us being old school, we got advantages. Or kind of older school, like
yeah,
I feel like we in the middle between the old school people,
bro,
and the young kids.
That's why I say us being born in like 93.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Us being born in 93, we got the. I always say that we got the best of everything. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
My parents is older. You know what I'm saying? Everybody in my family is older. I think me and my brother are the youngest, like cousins in our family.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we see everything, we hear everything. You know what I mean? Even like with your mom as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So.
All my friends old too.
Yeah, yeah. I got some OG friends. Got some 40 year old.
My bestest of friends is old.
Yeah, bro. Nah, because you
33s and 34s. Like,
yeah, 30s. Yeah.
I was always the young one of the group. Like all my big homies that I was telling you about, they know DJ Champ earlier. Man.
Right,
I'm
right.
Really trained.
Yeah.
He like 33 or something. And I used to stay with him when I was in Atlanta and Alabama. And I was always, they called me Lil Darren. I couldn't get in nowhere.
Man, you had that little standpoint for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's why I'm in the same boat. You know, we got old heads. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But we in between because we still kind of hip with everything.
Yeah.
It's like the people that's a little bit older than us, like, they kind of lost.
Low key, bro. Yeah. No, for real. Our reason why I agree with you because they so lost. They so set in their ways that they lost.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, keep it up with the Joneses ain't a bad thing. Like, for example, like you said, keep it up with Joneses can be negative if you're trying to be like everybody else and get a credit card and buy all types of bullshit you don't need.
Right.
You keep up with the Joneses in a bad way like that, you got the ones that, you know, times is changing. You know what I'm saying? Like, technology.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, my parents always ask me to tell them how to work the cell phone. I mean, hey, shit is happening.
Right.
You know what I mean? We're going into 2020. Every year is like what? Like, iPhone, like, what, draw, like, what, three new phones, man, bro, this year? Like, three new phones over different? Don't even
get me started on them.
You see what I mean? You see what I'm saying, man? That shit is wild, bro. That shit is wild. No, but what about your music, like,
influences? Oh, yeah. Musically, it's crazy. Musically, that's why I, like, work really well as a producer with the new generation of music because I predicted where it was going to go. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So musically, growing up, I like Ludacris.
I was about to say, yeah. Using Ludacris, yeah.
The reason I like Ludacris, though, was because his music used to be so hard. He, like, formatted how to make hits. But then he was different, too. Like, you know, it was so many people you could hear after Lil Wayne where you'd be like, oh, that person sound like Lil Wayne or that person that. But you could never really be like, oh, that person would sound like Ludacris. Like,
no.
Like, so...
Thinking about it, nah.
Yeah.
Nah. Some people probably say Big Sean. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Nah. That's a strong maybe. No,
get back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Ain't nobody. Too Fast, Too Furious soundtrack.
ain't nobody really ever sound like Lil Crystal.
Nah. I can see that. That's a lot of people, yeah.
So growing up, that's why I liked him. But musically, like, when I started making beats, what was going on at the time was Soulja Boy and then Roscoe Dash. So what's funny is even though I like Luda and people that really rap, I really was a Roscoe Dash fan.
Right, like, right.
It was bad. Like, I was a fanatic. I knew all the words.
He said it was bad.
Yeah. And but like the crazy thing was all my old head friends don't tell you about it was like, why you listen to that? That shit garbage. And I was like, bro, this is going to be the future. Everybody going to be singing on. Like, I was telling them, like, watch. Everybody going to be singing. So now to see all the kids. And then from there, I went on in college to meet Speaker Knocker. So he was really, like, to me, like, the godfather of, like, a lot of these other people. Like, Nav and all these people that's
right.
In his lane. Right. A Boogie.
Yeah.
Lil TJ. Yeah. Roddy Ricch. All of them to me sound like Speaker Knocker. So to watch how it evolved, like, I've seen why it's going where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
Because the little TJs and the Roddy Riches, they 19. Speaker Knockers, if he was still alive, he'd be 22, 23.
Yep.
So when he was making music at 18, the little TJs and stuff was 13 and 14. This is when they started rapping. So this is the people they was listening to and mimicking and getting better off of.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So now you got little TJs and Roddy Riches who are all evolved Speaker Knockers because that's what they was listening to when they started rapping.
You know, that's true. I saw maybe them tweets going around or them posts on Instagram like, oh, so-and-so died, so-and-so can walk.
Right.
I saw one like that about Speaker Knockers, and I already thought about it. I was like, yeah, bro, he just how people say, you know, Wayne influenced people like, you know, Thug and everybody else. Mm-hmm. Speaker Knockers did a lot. Speaker Knockers don't get a lot of credit that he deserves.
But he do. I mean, a lot of them do acknowledge it. Like, you know Lil Tecca?
Sounds familiar.
You know that he got that song, The Ransom?
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I got two twin guys, turn you to a dancer.
Yeah.
He say all the time in his interviews, his favorite rapper is Speaker Knockers. Mm-hmm. And his stuff sounds just like Speaker Knockers music. Like,
heavily influenced.
Yeah.
That's heavily influenced. What about, what about Meeting? How was Meeting Common
when you met Common? Yeah, Common is a dope person.
How did you meet Common?
My sophomore year, like the summer after in college, I won an internship through Coca-Cola. It's called the Pay It Forward.
Uh-huh.
And they have four different categories. They had like community outreach, which Common was the person for that. Uh-huh. Then they had music, which was Common for that. But he just had his people that won the community outreach, which was somebody else, and me on different weeks.
Right.
And then there was the TV, which was Sheila Johnson.
Yeah, I'm talking about
the BET on there for a minute. And then the business one was Magic Johnson. And then
you had a good variety.
Yeah. Man. So when you, the way they had it is somebody had to like nominate you. Uh-huh. And like my aunt nominated me. It could be anybody. But the crazy thing was, is like my aunt that nominated me, she went to Tuskegee, but then my other aunt went to Harvard. Oh, so man. Like she wrote my letter.
Right.
And just from the letter,
right,
I got to the semifinals. And that was like 3,000 people still. And then from there, you had to send in a resume. And at the time, I was already making my own music moves. Not only did I have like a 3.8 at Tuskegee, I had I had my own website with the beats on the SoundClick.
Yeah.
When everybody had SoundClick.
Uh-huh.
I had like 150,000 views on my own before the Common stuff. So like just having all of that type of stuff in my little portfolio, there was an age cap. So like the people, you had to be from like 16 to 18 or something to even apply.
Right.
And so most of the people my age didn't have all the stuff going for me that I did. So after I submitted my resume, I won. But ironically, I had put Magic Johnson on there before Common. I won. Like they asked you the rank of the people you wanted to work with type deal. And I put Magic Johnson.
Johnson, of course.
Because I was like thinking in my head, like, you know, at the time when I had went for the trip, that's when like Roscoe and all that was kind of still popping. So I wanted to, like, Magic Johnson, because I'm like, he going to introduce me to a lot of business people, but he the type of person that can introduce me to any rapper.
Low-key, because it's Magic, bro. Yeah. Like, who's going to say no to Magic?
Right.
Yeah.
So I can go down there and be like, yo, like, help me with this.
Yeah.
So I ended up going with Common, and it was cool. It ended up, that's how I ended up being able to meet and work in Ludacris' office, because one day they just had me doing the most on this internship, and I
really felt
like an assistant, man.
Was you getting coffee and copy and paper?
Pretty much. It was bad. Like, it was real bad, man. They had us, we were supposed to go to Jimmy Kimmel, right?
Oh, Jimmy Kimmel Live.
Yeah.
Show.
And the day, it was two shows in one day. We also went to Michael and Kelly that same day.
Uh-huh.
So that morning, we get up and go to Michael and Kelly. Boom. It was tight. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Went backstage, got to meet Michael and Kelly.
Man.
And all these different people that was on the show that day. And then we headed back to the hotel, and we supposed to get these tickets. And it was so much traffic that we getting close to the hotel, and Common or the intern or the other assistant gets out of the car and starts walking. Like, I'm going to just walk and get the tickets, because it's going to be faster than just waiting in his car.
Mm-hmm.
And so Common was like, yo, Darren, can you walk with her so she ain't walking by herself? I'm like, cool. So we walk into the hotel, and we get to the hotel, and she starts going up the elevator like, hey, go to the concierge and get these tickets, and then wait on me. I'm going to come back down here, and we're going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I said, all right. So I went to concierge and got the tickets, but I had a guest that went with me, so I just went upstairs to the room to get my guest so they can come with me, because they had the ticket for them. And so I went to get my guest and came back down, and she left me.
Look,
I caught her. I was like, where you at? She was like, shoot, I'm on the way to the to that thing. And look, it's in New York. Like, I ain't never been to New York. So
yeah,
what's
the first time?
I don't even know nothing about where I'm going or nothing. And then the traffic so dead stopped.
So nasty, bro, in New York. Man.
She told me, like, catch a cab and come here. And then I'm sitting in waiting on this cab for, like, 10 minutes. I call her back, like, I've been waiting for 10 minutes, and ain't no cars even moved. She was like, well, take the subway. I'm like,
no.
I don't even know where I'm at. Like,
no, I'm not from here.
So I take the subway, bro. I get there, or get halfway there, and then Common manager comes. Like, hey, where you at? What you doing? And I was like, I told him everything like this. She told me to get the ticket. She left me, woo. He was like, well, just turn around and go back to the room. Like, just turn around and go back to the room, man. Y'all doing too much type stuff. So I turn around, get ready to go back to the room. And mind you, like, I'm paying to get through every little toll and stuff to get where I was supposed to go.
Bro.
And I was down there, and then he turned me around. And then I'll get back close to the room. I'll get ready to get in the, because I stayed at this fire. Like, when Coke took care of it, they gave me, I stayed at the Trump Soho and made nice rooms. Oh, yeah. Like, when I came in the room, like, I had a remote, and I turned the remote on to, like, blinds open, type shit. TV turn on and say, hey, Darren, hello.
So James Bond.
Like, yeah, it was tight. Yeah. So I'm like, man, forget it. I'm about to go to the room and just kick it. And right as soon as I get back to the hotel, the assistant called me back. It was like, where you at? And I was like, man, look, called my manager named Derek. I was like, Derek just called me and told me, go back to the room because I was taking too long. She was like, Derek don't know you got them tickets. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, so I was about to say, forget it. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to just do it.
I ain't got nothing else to do.
Like, so I would go all the way back, give her the tickets. And when I give her the tickets, I find out that the Jimmy Kimmel is over. By the time I get there, it's all over. The tickets wasn't for us to go to Jimmy Kimmel. It was for Common and assistant to go to a play after Jimmy Kimmel. So
Bro, I was so mad.
I was mad. Like, and I ain't say nothing, but they all seen it on my face. Just like, when I found out what it was for.
Bro,
and then to put the whipped cream on it, me, my company was a male. It was my friend. So now the manager, when I finally got there with the tickets, Common went with the assistant into the play, and I'm just stuck with the manager, and the manager got a date. So me and my boy just kept riding around with the manager for an hour or two, getting something to eat and stuff with the date. I was so mad.
That would have been tight. Damn, are you serious, bro? That's what you're so making the bed shit.
Yeah,
well, give me a slice of cheesecake, man.
Yeah, that's how it was. And so the manager hit me in the morning, though. And like 7 or 6 in the morning, like, Darren keep meeting me for breakfast. I'm like, bet. So I just get up, go for breakfast, and then he apologized for the day before. And he asked me who is my favorite rapper, and I told him Luda, and he hit Luda manager right there and linked us up when I got back to Alabama.
And you met Luda.
Yeah.
I was meeting Luda.
Tight. It was like, it was bittersweet, I ain't gonna lie.
Man, nah, keep it a buck.
It was cool because it was like I was starstruck a little bit. But I believe that was the end of, like, after I met him, that was, like, me, the last superstar I would meet that would make me happy or anything like that.
Right.
But it was sad because it was, like, the way I met him, the first time I got to go down there, Common's manager hooked me with Luda's manager. So I went and visited, they labeled DTP's office, like, 3 or 4 times and just got to link with the manager.
Mm-hmm.
And then, ironically, right when I got back there and already went to DTP 2 or 3 times, Luda came to Auburn, Alabama, to perform.
Right.
And Auburn, from my school to ski, is only 10 or 15 minutes. Like, I lived in Auburn.
Dude, so, nice player.
Yeah.
I was right there.
Yeah. So, 3 weeks after I got back from the Common internship, Luda came to Auburn for the back-to-school performance or whatever in the stadium. And I called the manager, and he got me back there and gave me the VIP, and I was back there with Luda in the dressing room, got to talk to him and everything.
Yeah.
But that's where it was kind of weak, because he was acting like superstars. Like, he said the bare minimum and then went in the corner and, like,
damn,
sat by himself. But somebody like Luda, you know,
yeah,
that's where I couldn't be, like, heartfelt about it, because you got to know, like, he's been making music for 20 years. That's probably so old to him. Like, think if you had a job for 20 years, you know what I'm saying? It's probably just the emotion is for him. So that's probably really what it was. I don't think he was on no, like, superstar stuff. I just think he just be probably going through the motions when he do the music.
Yeah.
But just to see him like that, like, it wasn't like how I imagined
he was, like, oh,
was
going
to be.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, he really was like, fuck, bro.
Yeah.
Like, are you serious? Like, for real? Like, you my favorite rapper or something?
It's crazy, man. But it's crazy how stuff works full circle, you know.
Right.
So, I met the manager through all of that, got close with him. The manager, after all of that stuff, going down there a couple of times and meeting the people in the office, the manager wasn't even there the first 3 times I went to the office. He was in New York. So I was meeting everybody else in the office but him. And then Luda came to Auburn, so I got to go there. Mm-hmm. And then right shortly after, random, bro, so random, I used to pay this dude named Chase. He was a promoter in Auburn. And every year, at the beginning of the year, around this time, like October-ish, all the fraternities would have, like, this week where they would bring, it would be in October, then they would have another one in the spring. Mm-hmm. Where they would, like, all the white fraternities would bring, like, all these different rappers and stuff like that.
Right.
And so Chase was the person that was in charge of that for all, like, all the fraternities would hire him to go get the artists.
Right.
And so I would pay Chase like $200 every time an artist come, be like, bro, just give me back there to all of them. I'm not no groupie. I'm not going to be bringing girls and making it hot. Just let me get back there so I can give them, get an email or give them my beats, and then I'll bounce like what I do the most. And so we had that worked out to where I would do that every time. And so one random day out of nowhere, Chase calls me because he didn't have a car and was like, yo, I need a ride to Atlanta. Like, I'll give you gas money and pay you a little extra on top and all that. I got to meet it. No, right. Bet. So I just take him. I didn't even ask no question. I just take him down there. And because, you know, I'm thinking more of this to do for the concerts. He'll owe me one type of thing. You know what
right,
I'm saying?
Right, right.
I'm thinking that. And then when we get there, when we pull up, it's at the DTP labels. And he meeting Luda's manager.
Shaka.
Yeah, not the other one. Oh. Luda got two. Shaka, oh, okay. Zulu, and Jeff Dixon.
Okay, okay.
Jeff Dixon was the one I know.
Okay.
And so he meeting with Jeff Dixon. And so I'm sitting in the waiting room with Chase, and then Jeff walk up. I didn't even know the whole time that that's who his meeting was with. And then I seen Jeff walk up, and I'm like, damn, you ain't telling me you were Jeff.
Yeah.
And so Jeff kind of looking like, who are you? Because we never met. We just met on the phone.
Right.
And that's when I told him, I'm Darren. Like, I met you through common manager Derek, and then we kept in contact over there. He said, dang, I don't know how I keep running into you. Whatever you doing, do it right. You doing it right. And that's I keep seeing you. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so right after that, I went to his office. Like, after they meeting, he came out. Chase came out and said, Jeff wants you to come back there.
Uh-huh.
And so I go back there, and me and Jeff chopping it up. He like, yeah, the stuff you doing right, man, I like this. And then he was another person in the back of the room, a nobody at the time. He's like, this is B Wright. He said he part of our management team here, interning, learning a lot of stuff, and he managed a couple artists.
Right.
And you ever heard of the group 2-9?
Yeah, yeah.
He managed them at the time. And B. Wright ended up right after that becoming head of marketing for Mike Will and Ray Schrummer. Like,
ain't that some shit? Like,
it should show you how small this music industry is.
Yeah.
It ain't that big.
Like, yeah, right.
So now that's where a lot of my connections today that's coming in, because literally everybody I met back then is doing it now. Like, the people that's still in it is some, you know?
Right. Man.
So sticking through it, the test of time is like the whole code, because you get hard and then all your connections, like, let's say you go out to every event this year, all year, and just meet everybody you can. In 3 years, some of those people you met is going to all be doing, making moves. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But you just got to stick in it long enough to see where everybody go and build something for yourself so you can help those other people that's going. Where
right. Sticking to the script pretty much. Yeah. So now I see you got your own, pretty much your own thing going on. So how's have you seen this? Well, first of all, before I ask that question, explain what Go House is and whatnot, and how you came up with the concept of Go House and stuff.
All right. So when I first got back, it was out the blue. I just came back for some family situation, and I was not planning on just going straight to Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And so out the blue, last minute, literally like 2 weeks before I moved to Atlanta, I moved back here. And it was, to me, like, musically, that was like a dream crusher, because I ain't really like a lot of the artists out here.
Right.
I'm just now starting to like the artists that's coming up by themselves, and most of them are younger, like 18 to 21. But when I first came out here, that was like 3-4 years ago, all the 18s and 20-year-olds were 14s,
like
the 16s then.
Right.
So the people that I was looking at that was like 20 and up that time, I ain't really like.
Mm.
So I finally found somebody that I liked, and I just came up to him. His name is Mac Timothy, and I was like, yo, I ain't gonna charge you for the beats or the studio time. And I had just bought that studio out west. Remember when I was over there?
Yeah, on off of LaPlace Trail.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I won't charge you for no studio time and no beats. Just let's work and make something hard. And so we started developing a sound, and then shortly after, we had a meeting, and we had all these people come that was like other producers. Keisha came, another artist. We had another 2 more artists that was there, and an engineer. We had like 10 to 12 people at the first meeting.
Right.
But then the original plan with the Goat House was really like all of us is just super talented and we gonna just help each other out to come up together.
Right, right.
And then everybody was gonna pay dues like 50 to 100 a month, and then they would pay for the studio and then extra stuff we trying to get every month. Like,
that's smart. That's smart, for real.
Mm-hmm. And then the producers there would work with each other and have keys to the studio. The artists would have keys and work with it. And I had it real set up like a Google Gmail calendars that everybody had access to, and I scheduled like Monday, Tuesday, this artist with these different producers, and everybody could just go to the sessions. Like, it was real, you know, thought out. Pretty much fast forward to now, or Mac Timothy had ended up dying, so that was crazy. After about a year of developing him and finally putting his plan together, we shot 4 or 5 videos. Like, I still got the unreleased videos to this day. Like, got everything stacked up ready to release him the right way. And he died. So then for a minute, like 6 months, I made beats still, but I wasn't pushing no artists or putting nothing out. I was just recollecting, like, what am I about to do? Am I about to leave and move to Atlanta, or am I finding another artist? Or, you know what I mean? And so from there, after about 6 months, we started back up with Keisha, getting her sound together, because that's the whole process with take a long time. I always work with the artists, and we do 6 months of recording and working before we put music out, because that's the first thing. Like, if you play football, are you just going to go there and, you know, walk on the field and play the game the first day? Nah, they be having training camp.
Yeah, you got 2 days or something like that. Yeah,
all of that. Yeah, so artists be acting like that, like they want to put out everything they ever do and stuff like that. But I don't believe in that. We're going to do some development first. So then I started back over with Keisha. And then that's where I got the idea to push the Go House as a brand, a music brand, instead of like a label.
Mm-hmm.
And that way it work out for everybody. Because the producers, all I want to do is build a YouTube channel, like a co-mending deal. So then I work closely with a videographer, and I could just go to an artist, make their beat, produce the song, shoot the video, and put it on the channel. And then from there, build a channel to where eventually I'm getting hundreds of thousands, millions every time I drop a video.
Right.
And then that's how it's lucrative and makes sense for me and the artist. It'll give the artist a platform to get big. And then I don't have to lock them into no long-term contract. I just make money off the song we did together on the channel. And then from there, hopefully it's a platform for your career. You know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right.
If we click like a family and you just want me to keep doing that for you, then we can move on to trying to make it a label situation, but I really just wanted to be a platform, like, you know.
Right. No, I understand. Have you seen I'm pretty sure you experienced, you know, the ups and downs, especially with, you know, being an independent movement and whatnot. So how do you, as an artist and whatnot, how do you cope with that? Or how do you, you know, get through those turbulent times?
You mean with an artist, or
no, or not as an
or
artist,
as a producer,
or as just an individual yourself,
man?
Because it's been some. I know it's been some times. You know what I mean?
It's like the thing is, you gotta first off, you gotta do something you're good at and master it. It's not always necessarily about something you love. You'll grow to love anything you spend a lot of time in. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's the same with people. Like, if you spend enough time around somebody or something, you're going to love it eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, starting off, I just had to pick something, and I picked music. And so, for me, I always take the realistic routes, whatever I choose. So, when I see music, I have to figure out what are the producers that I want to be, like, doing to be in a position, you know? And so, times get hard. It's time where you not getting the results you want and you want to give up. But you always have to ask yourself, why is it not working? Because there's an answer. There's an answer. It's never just luck and opportunity. There's an equation for success. There's luck in the sense of your probability. Like, to me, when you're getting hard at something, all you're doing is increasing the probability that you do it well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for instance, when I was all right with the beats, I could make a real hard beat, but it would be every 50 beats, every 25 beats.
Right.
So if I was to go in a session, it might be deceiving, because that's where a lot of people say, when you know somebody real hard is when they, like, cook up on the spot, how good they are when they do that.
Right.
Because I could make, like, 1,000 beats in a month and then take my best 5 to a to a studio session and they have the hard beats. And that's how I used to work in the past. That's what kept it going when I wasn't that good. Right. Like when I used to work with Speaker Knockers, that was 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Like back then, I wasn't as good as I am now, but I used to make so many beats. Like I used to, he was in Columbia, South Carolina. So I go down there and see what he wants, take my best stuff, come back home, and I go back down there in 2 weeks on the weekend. But them whole 2 weeks, I'm just making beats.
Mashing
beats
up. Beats. Yeah, no breaks.
So I got at least 5 or 10 solids that he's going to rock with, you know. But now I'm getting real comfortable to where I can, like, I would rather work on the spot. Like, right even before I just came here, I just got a session with somebody. And I cooked the beat up on the spot there, helped them write the song there, and then record it there. And then we'll leave and then go back to the big studio and re-record the beat.
Right.
So really, I guess the work is what keep it going and my motivation to know what I want in the end, like the end goal result is what keep me going. And then the fact that I've actually stuck in it so long now, I see my other friends that stuck with it starting to blow up like from everywhere.
Right.
And so you really see that the key to all of this is perfecting your craft and staying with it until you do perfect it.
Man, just how we was talking. Before we got on the mic, you know, he was like asking me, are you seeing the results that you want to see? And I was like, a little bit, but you know, like you said, what you just said, you know, you got to think about why you're not seeing some of the results that you want to see.
Right.
And I think about that constantly, man, all the time. So when I'm like, just chill, I can be driving, bro, at work, just chill, I'm thinking to myself, how can I really, you know, how can I improve quality? How can I improve branding? Or how can I, you know, improve the marketing? You know what I'm saying? How to put it out there. And those are the hardest parts to me. You know, I didn't go to school for, you know, marketing or branding, but I know 1 + 1 = 2. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I know common sense is common sense. You know, word of mouth is, you know, to me is best promotion. Just keep flooding your shit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's how I feel.
So just like we was talking with you, you assume like the next step up is the visuals.
Yeah, yeah.
And like when you breaking down, when you want to see growth, that's something you can examine in other people and be like, dang, this is working for them with the visuals. And then even with the marketing, you got an advantage because what you're doing, you interviewing people from all different types of places. You know what I'm saying? So like once you get the visuals and chop up the visuals right and you got – you know how you can put captions below it, like how Gary Vee do?
Yeah.
You can
do
that with this interview. And then when I'm reposting it on my page, now you get my following from my music. And then next week you do somebody else that got a good following and that. And then, boom, the getting them to tag you and post the videos on their page is going to help your following grow.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. That's true. Because right now I'm just, you know, just got my logo and I got like the little sound waves of people talking. You know what I mean? So.
But it's that, like you said, that visual.
Yeah, bro, that visual gonna kill it.
When I'm learning from YouTube and the successful feeds on like Gary V's and stuff like that, it's them captions.
Yeah.
The clever caption you put to grab people's attention.
Man, damn near, damn near it is. But I ain't gonna know what I'm saying. I ain't gonna do no clickbait type shit. There's a lot of people out here.
Nah, but yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But it's people like Gary V that's damn near clickbait, but you do it to where it's not. It's like really the juiciest line in his whole
thing. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You're not for real.
Like, but.
But it's not no gossip shit, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Oh, shit. What the hell you just say? You know what I mean? But he's really.
Like, what he'd do is be like, I watch him, he'll go garage selling on a Saturday, and he'll make $1,000 on just that Saturday, just garage selling.
Yeah.
And so then his, like, title would be How to Make $1,000 Garage Sales.
Yeah, it's about how you put it out.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But having the visual along with that little clip is something that marketing-wise grab a lot of attention. And then you'll get the people posting it that got the audience.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
So it brings my next question. With you going to school for business, how does that help you with music?
It's crazy because
not to cut you off, bro, but I think that, you know, especially when it comes to like this, I think you'd have some type of like backing or some type of education for sure, especially when you're going into entrepreneurship.
Right.
You know?
Well, the first thing is the experience. You know what I'm saying? Nothing tops experience. So at the end of the day, if you was going to be an entrepreneur, if you had a mentor, or if your pops or somebody had a business and you seen them run it successfully, you wouldn't have to necessarily need school if you got an example of how it works. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I kind of like, even though my pops had a business, when I was in high school, I was living up here with my mom. So like a lot of my like learning years when I was learning about that stuff, I didn't have a good example.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went to school, it's like I started going to school and getting that knowledge at the same time I started my business. Because even though I started making music in high school, when I got to college, that's when I decided to take it full time serious. Like, I'm not going to get a job and I'm going to eat off of this.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, because I joined a business fraternity too.
Oh.
Pi Sigma Epsilon.
Okay.
It's everywhere. It's even at IU and, you know. And so when I did that, everybody on my frat line had their own businesses. Like, one of the girls sold t-shirts, one of the dudes cut hair. Everybody had their own business.
Yeah.
So, like, I was like, I need to do my own business. And that's when I started taking the music serious. And from there, I was started going to Atlanta every weekend. So I'm learning these concepts in school, and then I'm seeing it. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? But seeing it, just having my own business, I learned. So if you went out here and tried your business and you took it serious for 2 or 3 years and then you went to college, you would pretty much just be putting the two and two together.
Right.
Like,
right.
I learned this in school. Or I learned this by doing my business, but this is the name for it in mm-hmm. school, pretty much.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right, I get what you're saying.
Like, I learned some tight concepts. It is some stuff, though, they teach you mm-hmm. concept-wise that makes stuff make way more clear.
A lot more sense.
Like, with... I remember in one of my marketing classes, they had this huge bubble, and it was a circle, and it was like the first 15 to 20% of that bubble. So let's say out of the whole bubble, that's your target audience. Let's say it's 1 million people.
Mm-hmm.
The first 15 to 20%, that's like 15 to 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's that million, so 150 to 200,000 people. Those people are the people that are new to things and they're looking to be new consumers.
Right.
So remember when we was in high school with music? So
yeah.
If I related to my music, those are the high schoolers and the young people.
Mm-hmm.
The young people, when it comes to music culture, are the ones that want to imprint. They don't want to hear something that's already on the radio. They want to find it, discover it, and make it cool. Like, you remember in school, I used to go to hip hop early and download all the songs nobody knew.
No, for real.
Like, yeah. Real.
The first one on live mixtapes and that pitch, I'm waiting on that.
Yeah. And so when you look up that data in music, it tell you that the average, the people that purchase the most in music are 17 to 22. And so that first 15 or 20%, if your product is the hit, like if you got the real good product and you mm-hmm. impress those people, then you unlock the second tier of people.
Right.
Which this is the people that not only want to hear a good product, but they got to hear it from one person before, which would be the first person, that the key people that are the deal breakers. And then if you impress, your product is so good, you make it to the first and the second one, then you get the third tier of people. Which mm-hmm. this is the people that got to hear it on the radio 10 times before they like it. Like,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, like, that was a concept I learned in school. You know what I'm saying? But made it make sense with the music. So,
right.
Like, it's just like real experience do the same thing in school. But if you don't have no real experience or no way of getting a real experience, you probably should go to school.
Yeah, you had the best. Well, I could say you had the best. Almost had, like, no, I didn't say almost. I could say you had the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like you said, with the business frat, then you say your father, and then what you going to school, you know, pretty much everything for enough, you know, all finagle with that, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Pretty much, I say it helps you build the brand. And you know what a good deal is, what a bad deal is.
Right.
Yeah. Nah, that's true.
Musically, though, just to state the facts for all record, recording artists and producers, there's no such thing as good deals.
Oh,
they're
man.
All bad.
That's why, hold on. I listened to somebody. And I was like, man, you gonna get fucked. It was a rapper. He was like, you gonna get fucked.
But a lot of people don't understand how the deals work. Do you know how record contracts work, bro? Personally?
No, I just hear a lot of people talk about how they get fucked, and they talk about a 360 deal.
It don't even have to be a 360.
And that's what everybody's
the 360s about. Is terrible. But even before the 360s, like, even our favorite artists growing up that we thought had all this money, they was all in these contracts.
Bro,
like,
I was watching, before you start, I was watching, it was like a segment. So it's on YouTube, a segment of MTV. And like, I showed about all the rappers talking about how they break down they shit and said, man, by the end of the month, or by the time I pay everybody off, man, I got like $5,000.
Yeah.
And you signed a multi-million dollar contract, nigga, you got five stacks?
It's because it's how they doing it. Like, all right. Producers get record contracts too, but theirs called publishing contracts.
Right.
It's like the same deal as a recording contract, but just for the producer. These contracts, they said the reason they call them recording and publishing contracts, because if they caught them loans, they wouldn't be able to have them because it would be illegal. Because, you know, the government got stipulations you can put on loans. You can't charge so much interest and stuff like that.
That's true.
So pretty much when a label gives you $2 million, let's say you hottest thing out here, they're going to give you $2 million. And that's a big contract, first off. Like, most people that's hot is not getting $2
million. No, that's a crazy dumb contract.
Yeah. So let's say you get $2 million. That $2 million they give you is an advance. So it's a loan, pretty much. It's not, but here's the thing, though. That's what's funny about it. If you was to go to a bank and ask for a $2 million loan, and they gave you the loan, right? Mm-hmm. They would say, you got to pay us back $2.5 million in this amount of time, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the record label does. But then on top of that, they own 85% of your music business.
So that includes what, your masters?
Yeah, they own 85% of all your masters. And so pretty much that's like you going to a business right now and going to the bank and saying, I need $2 million to start my business. And they say, okay, we're going to need $2.5 million back and we want 85% of your business. You only get 15%. God. And then when you paying us back, we get 85. So let's say we'll give you the $2 million to start your business up front. You spend the whole thing making this tight business. We get 85%. You get 15. So now when you make $1 million that year, we got 850,000. You got 150,000. But you owe me that 150 because I gave you the $2 million. Mm-hmm. So you still owe me that. Mm-hmm. So that's how the record contracts go. They give you the $2 million. You get the advance up front. Then you put out a record. Let's say it makes $1 million. The label gets $850,000. You get $150,000. Then you got to pay them back for the advance they got. And then everything else, the marketing, the producer, the recording fees, all of that come out your 15% too. So you got to still go back and all of that budget stuff. They say, oh, we got this budget for the producers. You got this budget for the videos. You got to pay them all that back too. So at the end of the day, it's a slave contract.
Y'all was about to say, bro, that is modern day slavery. Oh, my God, bro. This is what
you want to know what's the crazy fact a lot of people don't know? The original copy of your stuff is called the master. And the duplicates of the master are called slaves. And that's the real music technical term. So a copy version of that master song is called a slave copy.
That's...
Ain't it crazy?
That's fucked up. That's fucked up. That is fucked up.
It's crazy, ain't it?
Man, bro.
So when the label buy you and give you that $2 million advance, they own your master. Now they're your music master. They own the master's
stuff. Masters.
Yeah, they own all your stuff. And you pretty much just sold out.
Because
you have no control. I said I would only take a record contract the day I'm ready to stop. Like, if they talking about $5 million and I think $5 million enough, I won't do music no more and I just do real estate and get some money.
Type shit.
That's enough. That's how I would do it. Like, you know, but if I care about my music, like, you can't sign it because that's how they dangle your career in your face. Like, oh, you owe us $5 million, put on this dress or else we're not going to release your music.
Type shit.
You're going to owe us all this money and never get your music, get shelved.
Yeah, legit be our slaves.
Yeah. So, for me, if I was to ever take a contract, I got to be done. So that way, if they ever pull something like that on me and they say I'm not going to drop music, I'm like, I don't care. Like,
that's fine with me. that's fine with me. So go ahead and, plug in your everything, social media, where they can find your music, Anything you want to pop there, bro.
All right, man. Well, just follow me on Instagram and Twitter. It's everything is the same. Darren Brown Time. D-A-R-R-E-N. Brown like the color, time like the watch. And then on Instagram, also follow Official Goat House. And those are my two platforms. And when I drop music, it'll be promoted on there. Start looking out for stuff in February. We got the winner to get the rest of the artists in shape. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, you got it, bro. Don't even trip, man. And y'all already know who I am. Cody God Dimension Podcast. I'm signing out. I'll holler at y'all later.